I'll tell you what I'm going to do. We have an hour and a half. There's a lot that we can learn this morning. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to press through this material. And what I want you to do is every time you want to talk, you raise your hand and butt in, okay? And just plow right on through it. If you need greater clarification, interaction, whatever, we'll stop right there at that point, and we'll pick up what you need. But I do want to tell you that we want to do two things in your time this morning with us. One is we want to give you hope that reaching your neighbors can be a possibility. It really can. Let's see, we've got, I can move you a chair right here. And I am exhibit A that it is a possibility, and what most people need is hope. I'll tell you why in just a minute. The other is I want to give you some ideas and tools that will help you in reaching your neighbors, because this is not hard. Most of the problems that come, even, for example, with this book that I'm going to give you, let's see, Nancy, you mentioned just yesterday, it's just a little too complicated. Bob, Your Home, A Lighthouse. Bob is a wonderful friend of mine. In fact, he's coming to the U.S. President's Conference in next month, and he'll be sharing, and he will motivate people, fire them up. They'll go out the gate here. As Howie said, just they can't wait to get at it. The problem is Bob is a uniquely gifted guy and is capable of doing some things that others are not capable of. And that's the story of an evangelist. Is evangelists tend to, they can do so many things well that they tend to add more than most of us can do. Now, I am not an evangelist. I am more of a public evangelist than I am a personal evangelist. I have true confessions right now. Until I'm 59 years old, what was it, Becky? Probably when I was about 53 when I came home, somewhere in there. I had been traveling with Jim Peterson, and I was griping and complaining about Jim, and I was saying to himself, why is he always talking about, you know, just insiders and all this stuff? There are 1,000 ways to do evangelism, all kinds of ways of getting the gospel out. He's stuck on one record, and here I am on this flight flying back from Detroit. I've been with him all weekend. We're good buddies. But I'm thinking, I'm just tired of it. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Alan, why are you so bent out of shape? And I thought, well, I need to think about that. So, Lord, tell me, why am I so bent out of shape? And then I thought, the reason is because I have a whole set of things that I've done successfully all my life. And there's one thing I've never done, and that is I have never really reached my neighbors. And in fact, Becky and I lived in Canada for 14 years, and we were friends with our neighbors, but we never really reached them. So here I am, a 55-year-old man, telling people how to do ministry, and I have never really reached my neighbors. So I got home, and I said, well, honey, I think we're going to have to become like little children. We're going to have to start all over, just doing the little simple things. Now, I'll tell you more about this later on, but what we have going is it's not a wild, wonderful, thousands of people repenting. What we have is wonderful little things that have happened. Now, the other thing is you got to keep in mind that I travel over 50% of the time. Becky travels a lot with me. My neighbors travel. So what we get in this span of time, most people could get in probably half or even less time. So I can't really tell you what the span is. The fruit that started to really come in our lives through our neighbors took 5 years. So you don't want to go into this thing thinking, well, whoopee, I'm going to go out of here and I'm going to start loving my neighbors and they're all going to come running to me. It's not going to happen. Unless you're just, you're in a unique situation. But it is not overly hard. In fact, the simplicity of it is costly. But the simplicity of it is the beauty of it. Now, when I led a student ministry at the University of Illinois, we had 400 to 500 students involved regularly. And we had hundreds of students coming to Christ in the 70s. In Canada, when I led that ministry, buckets and buckets of people. Dorm meetings, I can remember them all right during the Jesus movement. We're standing up there sharing Jesus, and they're taking the comment cards and burning them in the back. It was a wild time. That's public evangelism. This is a different kind of evangelism. This is where you're coming with your life and your message together just to love people. Truth is, I never had time to really love my neighbors. That was the primary problem. Just never took the time. And over time, I've learned, and Becky and I have learned some things. Now, I've said to Becky, I'm just going to ask her to jump in like the rest of you as we move through the process and talk our way through this. Now, just to give us a setting, where are you with your neighbors right now? I'm not talking about evangelism here. I'm talking about where this is neighbors. So this is people that live next to you. Where are you right now? Carol, how are you doing with your neighbors?
Actually, we all stay pretty much to ourselves.
Okay. All right. Okay, that's good. That's where we were. In fact, when I introduced myself to my neighbors after this, oh, navigators, Christian Wright, stay away. Don't want anything to do with you. In fact, we don't even want to be good neighbors with you. So that's pretty much where we were. So that's a great starting point. If you know their name, that's good. Barb, how about you?
Well, we moved in April. We had lived in our other house for 28 years.
Yeah.
And so we made the plunge and moved. And so we're excited about the potential.
Oh, that's great.
A lot of the people that, we're all on 6 acres, so... You know, we're spread out.
Yeah.
But we knew a lot of them through the country club.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's kind of a natural.
Oh, yeah.
We are excited.
When you move, that's the most wonderful experience in the world because everybody's new. And when we got started with our neighbors, the problem was is we were, we were in that neighborhood. We'd been there for 4 or 5 years. And so... we knew their names and interacted with them, but...
One little interesting side, when we moved, our neighbors gave a party for us, and there were probably 40 people there, 50.
Yeah.
And they were all talking, and they had a little kind of a sharing time or whatever. And the things that they said of us, we hardly remembered.
Yeah.
But those things left an impact. We had a Bible study like 20 years ago. We had... different little things. So it's amazing the little things you do that people remember.
Just exactly.
So, I mean, it was just, we were left kind of, wow, we didn't realize that, you know, we had an impact, but we didn't know we had an impact.
And that's the beauty of it. And if you can connect the dots on that, you're on your way.
Yeah.
Because every one of you have little things like that that are going on. You have no idea that it's happening. When my neighbors, or our neighbors, sorry, honey, our neighbors came into the kingdom, they told us things about ourselves that we had never dreamed, both good and bad. Like, Hallie was telling us about, the hills and dams and so on. Well, you know, one night I invited... We had our neighbors over, and I thought, well, they may drink beer, so we better get some beer for them. And so I said to them, when they came in, I said, would you like to have a beer? And the wife looked, and these are pagan people, and the wife looked at Steve and said, you don't drink beer. And Steve does drink beer, but he doesn't drink beer at home. And so so Steve said to me, he said, why did you do that? He said, that was weird. And it truly was weird. So those are the kinds of things that go on. Okay, now anybody else? See, Katie, where are you with your...
We live also in an area that we're not close together.
Yeah.
You know, 5 acres, I think. And we moved up about 8 years ago to San Jose.
Yeah.
And it is a real mission field. And we moved up to be close to my mother and daddy. And my mom's with Laura now, but my daddy is 89. So we find that one of our big ministry areas is with a lot of elderly friends,
yeah,
of my dad's. That's specifically in the neighborhood. And boy, a lot of them are close to the passing
away. Right.
And so it is a critical time. So we've had Bible studies in our home, but most of these are pretty tough ones.
Yeah.
So we have the ministry of Meals on Wheels. My husband delivers all kinds of food, but I put a little daily bread in it.
Yeah.
And I try to do kind of a telephone ministry.
Yeah.
But I need to be, you know, just doing a lot of individual.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of tough sledding in that kind of environment. It's you just stay at it and at it. But it's amazing how God can work if you if you connect the dots. Most of our problems is we don't connect enough dots to make it work. I have listened, as I said earlier, to Jim Peterson for years and years. I stayed with Jim for a week, and some of you have read Jim's books. The thing that struck me, and this was in 1987, I think it was, staying in his house for a week, when Jim and Marge get up in the morning, of course, they're uniquely gifted. I'm different, but it's like their neighbors are standing at the door. Jim's out. Marge is out. And so they all come running. It's like a bunch of little children ready to eat cake. Now, but I still didn't understand what they were doing. And I still don't completely. But I do understand what I'm doing and what Becky and I are doing together, why it works. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to work for you, but I do know what it takes to make it fly. And that's the really important thing. And you're going to find that most of you are already doing pretty significant parts of this already, or have done it. To make it work. Well, let's move to reaching your neighbors is important because it's. I'm going to give you a series of reasons. Now, I want to get to the nuts and bolts of this. I've given you this primarily so you could do some reading. This group, after hearing Howie, if you're not motivated to reach your neighbors, why? I'm not going to help you a whole lot. One, it is biblical. And the reason it's biblical is because, we're to be a light to the world. We're salt and light. And so when we move into a place, we permeate it. Our lives and our message go together. And so that is so fundamentally important. The emphasis on households. There are so many references. All of these references that I've given you here are all references to whole households being affected by the gospel. And so when you're in your neighborhood, you're not just looking at Steve or Debbie or Dick or Priscilla. For example, on our left-hand side, as you face our front door, we don't know where the father is right now. We do know that the mother is a staunch Catholic, and we can't tell for sure where she is in her faith. The three children have come to the Lord, two of them through Navigator Ministry, one through FCA Ministry, but we are very great friends, and we just keep walking with them. Now, on the other side, there's a mother and Steve and Debbie, and they're all in the kingdom, and they're all very, very responsive to us. And we have connections across the street. One family is a believing family. The other family is a Lutheran family, the husband's in Korea, and the wife is home with the kids. Of course, that's quite an open door. Another thing is linking up your household to do the ministry. For example, all of my children, what we do is we all try to do the same thing in ministry. Now, we don't do it together. But, for example, when we went up to Grand Forks, Amy, my oldest daughter, she had a baby on the 22nd, and they're so committed to their people that on Christmas Eve, they're out delivering little gifts and bags to these wives who are in desperate need. I mean, you can think on a military base with all this TDY, man, these wives, I mean, that's like manna from heaven in terms of ministry. So there's just, so when Amy, when we go there, we get involved with what they're doing. So with our girls and their husbands, we know their friends, and we pray for them. And then when they come in, we don't make a big deal about it, but as much, for example, with Adam and Robin across the street, who are believers, they're military people. So what we did, we connect them with Amy and John, because they've got a natural, now they're not in the military now, but both of them are pilots, and so there's a natural connection. So you kind of work with those kinds of things and utilize family as part of it. But household, what you're thinking about is you're thinking about how does it flow as a household. And the Bible puts a lot of emphasis on that. Now, another thing is our manner of life. Philippians 2, 15 to 16. So that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life. Now, isn't that something? We shine. Now, we have a message, but there's... I can't tell you what it is like to go out in the morning and even in the darkness. Like this just happened a couple weeks ago. Because I travel a lot, Steve's gone a lot, and the next my next door neighbor. I'm pulling the car out, and I had to get out to pick up the paper. And I heard over there in the driveway, I couldn't even see him, "Hey, hey." And I turn and it's Steve. Well, big old Steve, he's about 6'4", and a big, big guy, comes over, throws his arms around me and says, "Haven't seen you in a while. How's it going?" And then he says, "Boy, Alan, Debbie and I really love you and Becky." Well, now, just 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, first he would have never said a word. Secondly, it would have been, "Don't come any closer. I don't want anything to do with you." So that's where we were. So God's done some marvelous things. But it's been a household experience. And it's been shining as light and putting no pressure on it. Not trying to push anything until that moment comes when God speaks. And I'll tell you about that. You do need to be bold. But only when God says so. Okay, sowing and reaping. My food is to do the will of Him who sent me to finish His work. And then he talks about sowing and reaping. They go hand in hand. Now, the children in the family next door that have come to the Lord, one of the daughters came to the Lord through FCA at the University of Arkansas. One came to the Lord through a number of influences, some of which was Navigator at Colorado State University. And another one has come to the Lord through Roger and Joan Matthews, where their daughter Katie was dating Greg. And he went to Eagle Lake Camp and trusted the Lord. Now, where does that come in with me? Well, we just prayed for them every day. Loved them, prayed for them, go to sporting events, check in with them from time to time, know what's going on. So it doesn't mean you're going to lead these people all to the Lord. It just means that you're going to be involved in their life in sowing. You get to reap some of them, but what you do get the benefit of is to see God work and see His hand at work in their lives. This is not rocket science. Thousands don't come to the Lord. It's just doing what God wants you to do. That's it. And when you do what God wants you to do, great things happen, and it becomes fun. Now, I have a number of other things that let me just follow this through so that I don't lose sight of where we're going. It's biblical. You've got those passages. It fits our culture. Now, most of us have grown up in the world, the culture was Christendom. Marv, you and I over lunch, we weren't talking about that topic, but when we were younger, a lot of us grew up in Christian homes. In my school, I was the quarterback on the football team. I was a big deal in our high school, and so I thought it was a badge of honor for me to walk around with my Bible on top of my books. Hardly anybody criticized me, except the guys on the football team. And the really interesting thing is that I was the official prayer in the high school. Anytime we had a meeting, you know, we had morning devotions over our PA system. I led the devotions in our high school quite often. And then anytime we had a big event, well, we get Alan to pray. So in August, we went back to our high school reunion. And so here we are. So what do they want me to do? They want me to pray. So, you know, I'm the official prayer. I still am. 40 years later, I'm the official prayer. Well, you can't do that anymore. They don't have that memory. They don't think that way. We do not live. We used to be a majority. And so we spoke to people as a member of the majority. And we invited them to come over and be part of the majority. And then what we were is kind of true believers in the midst of the majority in our culture. But we had tremendous numbers of people who were sympathetic to us. And even if they weren't sympathetic to us, they were kind of quiet in their criticism. Well, now I would say we are a significant minority. We're not pushed completely off the public stage, and there's still a lot of openness. But we certainly don't control the center of culture. And for that reason, we don't control the agenda. We just simply have our part. And one of the things that the Christian community has not learned how to do is how to be a minority. How to be an effective minority in a culture that is diverse. It has shifted. It doesn't mean even that the number of true believers have gone down significantly in America. It just means that we have lost the agenda. We no longer have the privilege of setting the agenda in the culture. So for that reason, when you go to your neighbors, you got a little further to go than we've had historically in the past. Now, a third reason is this does not require the gift of evangelism. Becky has the gift of mercy, and Becky doesn't even want to be public. Now, Mrs. Thomas, tell them what you do with Mrs. Thomas.
Mrs. Thomas is a lady in her 80s who lives with her daughter and son-in-law next door. And so I just go over, since Deb and Steve are gone all day, I go over once a week, try to just visit with her and listen to her. And sometimes pray with her when she has something, you know, just has a concern. Or sometimes she has anxiety attacks and things like that. So my contact, or if I have any lemon meringue pie, I try to make a point to take it over to her because that's her favorite. Mm-hmm. And just do things like that. And that's kind of it for just her relaxing and opening up.
Oh, the great thing about that is, see, that Mrs. Thomas then goes and talks to Steve and Debbie. Becky was over today. Then I'm the one that is the outgoing one, the extrovert in the family. So Steve comes and talks to me. But I can tell you, meeting with Mrs. Thomas is the foundation of all of that. That's the ball game right there. And they say, wow, Debbie says, Becky loves my mother. And so Debbie says to me, she says, Alan, I just love Becky, you know. Well, that's the key to the whole ballgame, because you don't have to be an evangelist. You do need to team up and you need to share gifts, but you don't have to be an evangelist. It's just not that big a deal, because we're talking about love here. Okay, now works best when combined with other forms of evangelism. Now, what do I mean? For example, we have the madrigal here. It's a very low-key, soft presentation of the gospel. In fact, sometimes you can hardly tell it's a clear presentation of the gospel if you come here. It just gives you a sense and a feeling of the gospel more than anything else. But there, it's there, and Jesus is lifted up. And one of the things we try to do is two or three times at Christmas time, pick two or three people and bring them to the madrigal. That really, really, really helps and works very, very effectively. But it doesn't work unless you've got an ongoing relationship with them. In other words, it's a relationship that makes the foundation of that work. So what you do is you look for your church and different things, and you ask yourself, now, would this be appropriate? For example, my daughter, Nancy, and her husband go to New Life. And it's interesting that they pick programs that would work to allow them to connect with that. But the key is the relationship. If you don't have the relationship, that program will probably just put them off. And then it's the most rewarding of all forms of evangelism. I can't say it's the most fruitful, but I can say that, you know, I told you about the Urbana experience and all that. I wouldn't trade what I've learned with my neighbors for all the other experiences put together. Because I can do this the rest of my life. I don't have to have a position. And like I told someone the other day, I said, you know, some ways I can't, I don't mean that I'm resigning or anything, but I can't wait for the day that I'm out of this role. And the reason is because I know exactly where I want to go. I want to go right to my neighbors and to my friends and plug it in, because I can do it to the day I die. It's kind of like golf. Play golf till the day you die. And so it's a wonderful thing. All right. Now, how is it done best? Now, we're going to be sure and interrupt me as we move through this, because, you know, now we're getting into the nuts and bolts of this thing. All right. First thing, it requires initiative. Now, ask yourself, what initiative have you taken for your neighbors? In the last month, what have you done? Okay, Christmas cookies. That's a tremendous one. Never let a Christmas go by or a holiday. Use those holidays like crazy, because that's what else have you done? What?
A meal to my neighbor.
Oh yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's Phyllis.
I decided on Valentine's Day.
Hey, that's.
All these people thinking that, you know, probably half of them will, you know, they're working.
Yeah.
Well, they're taking off work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can't even put them off.
Yeah.
And I just asked everybody to bring something that reminds them of love.
Yeah. Oh, that is, you couldn't do something any better, because it's so non-threatening. And, you know, they want to be there. And so open up your home, make it a warm place, and do that. Okay, what else?
We watched some teenage kids for our neighbors, like a younger couple.
Okay, we're going to get to that one. That is a biggie. In other words, getting involved in their lives. Now, but we're going to talk about two things there, though. Letting them in your life. One of the most wonderful things you can do is let your neighbors help you.
When we moved in, I called several of them and I said, I'm looking for people I can borrow from.
Yeah.
So when I needed something, I called them, but now they felt like they can call me.
Yeah.
We take in each other's trash cans and, you know, and they all said, I'm glad, you know, you're here.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, we can do that for each other. But I think, like you say, you need give them permission to help you too.
Yeah, see, one of the keys with Steve, my neighbor, is he's a handyman. Now, he's a very sophisticated handyman, but he can do anything and I can't do anything. So I just kind of say, well, sure. Like I painted my house and I've got this backside that is, it is way, way, way up in the air and scared the living daylights out of me. So Steve comes over, and he had his cousin was there from Pennsylvania, who was a painter, and he said to me, he said, would you like him to paint that for you? You bet. He can paint it. And, you know, we paid him, but the great thing about it was it got Steve and Debbie over in our backyard, and we're sitting there watching, and we're joking around and all that kind of stuff. They're helping us, and that it takes the threat out of everything, and they find out you're not such a bad person after all. Little acts of kindness, that's what we're talking about. Constant little acts of kindness all the time. Just keeping your eyes open, shoveling the driveway. Not every time, because you don't want to get yourself caught up and, you know, you're the official. Now, I do have a snowblower, and that really helps, you know, if there's a lot of snow. But you want them to remember that you were there in the moment of need. That's really, really key. Lots of little acts of kindness. Serving, we've already talked about that. Serving in home needs. Making sure that you're involved and immersed in all kinds of home needs. Then talking. Oh, man, talking. Just talk. Summertime, when you're doing yard work, that is the greatest time in the world. Turn the mower off. Go over to the fence. That's why we put this little image here on the front, sitting on the fence. There's nothing like sitting on the fence, so to speak, or your arm perched on the fence, talking about the kids, talking about what's going on in the community, how other people are doing. Just make sure you don't gossip. But just immersed in their lives. Like the other morning, Dick came out and he said, "Hey, Alan." And I, in the darkness, same thing, I picked him out. And so we came over and talked, and I said to him, I said, "Well, how's it going, Dick? I hear your surgery, all that, I'm over that." And so we talked a little bit more, and I said, "Well, I hear Greg's starting in basketball this year for Rampart." Yeah, he is. He says they're getting demolished every time they play, but he said at least he's doing okay. Well, I said, "Well, I need to make it to one of those games." He says, "Well, I don't know whether you want to show up." He says, "Make it baseball." You know, in other words, he's kind of embarrassed or losing. But he wants me to go. And it's very important, both for Greg and for him, that I show up in that in the basketball game. But it all comes out of talking, so that you can see it's going to take time. Kindness is at holiday time. Take advantage of every holiday that you can. Use that time to do something, to make it work. Now, I'm not very big on block parties, frankly. A lot of people like to put together block parties. The only thing I can see that a block party does is it serves to introduce you to people that you might want to focus on. Because you're going to have to focus. And that comes through prayer. But I find these things are far more... I think both Becky and I do. And then eating together is a big deal. Now, somebody said taking food. It's also important to get them in your house. Get in their house. Now, it doesn't have to be... There's something about being in one another's house that breaks the barrier down. I can't explain it, but just getting in the house and moving around... I told Becky the other night, I think you would agree with me, honey, when you give a person the key to your house, that is a high trust deal. So one of the things we've done with Steve and Debbie and with Dick and Priscilla is we've gone over and given them a key to the house. Said, "We'd like you to keep this key in case you ever need to get in to do something or if we ever need you to do anything." Now what that's saying to them, we trust you with our house. And you come right on in. You can do it. In fact, if you want to go through every room in the house when we're gone, that's okay. And, you know, we didn't tell them that. But that way they're going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's all right because we're just us. We're not performing. Well, now what we do is we step back and we do things together. And then the question is wonder when they're going to give us the key to their house. And just in the last couple of years, they've started giving us the key to their house. building trust is a big, big deal. And getting them, and key here, though, in terms of eating together is just sitting back, talking, and eating. You know, you see the place that the New Testament puts on that in terms of fellowship, like what Howie was talking about this morning. That is so important, eating together. There's something that you're sharing together. It has a much more intimate connection. So you want to get them in your house, and you want to get them sitting around, and you're wanting to become friends, and so you're sharing your life with them. But now just look at this. Is there anything that's hard? As you look at those things, what is the problem? Or is there a problem? Hospitality and so on. What?
Time.
You bet. You hit the nail on the head. It's costly to take the time to really love your neighbors. And I'm sure you're sitting there and you're saying, well, I don't know whether we have the time. Well, I'll tell you what. That's what we're in the world for, is to give time to the people that are around us, and especially our lost friends. And so the huge cost that you're going to see in all this is time. And we get so immersed in our Christian friends that we just don't have time for the people around us. And I'll just say to you, you got to carve it out. And that will be the biggest battle. There are a couple other huge battles in here, but I'm not trying to say this is the easiest thing in the world. But let me ask you this. Is there any one of us in this room who couldn't do that? Carol, could you do that? Some. What would be hard for you? Okay. Yeah. And if you don't have the gift of hospitality, you see, that can you're going to have to find other ways of making it work. And because there, I guess Becky does.
Yes.
So. And so I'd have to say we'd have a big advantage in that area. And anything else that just...
Well, I said, even if you don't have a gift of hospitality, I think you have to bring it down. You can simplify it so much. I think we make it hard on ourselves
with
hospitality. We think that if we're going to have someone over, you know, our house has to be perfect.
Yeah.
Our kids have to be perfect. The food has to be perfect. And I think we have to just say... bring something with you, or simplify it for us, because we are busy and we can't do it all.
Well, let me give you a good illustration on that one, Ian. Christmas time, Debbie brought a gift over. She walks in, and now this was on, 16th, because we were going up to Grand Forks. And they know we've got the whole family over. Well, our house looked like a bomb had hit it. I mean, we've got grandkids screaming and running around the house, and kids, little ones crying. We're cooking Christmas dinner. I have to kick stuff out of the way to open the front door just to let her in. Well, Debbie kind of walks in, and her eyes are as big as good night. This place looked like a bomb just hit it. Well, I thought to myself, well, that's the way we live, so hey, I don't know what you think about that, Debbie, but that's us. Well, the next day I saw Steve just before we left, and Steve said, boy, Alan, Debbie said, that looked like the happiest place you'd ever seen. And you don't have to have it all cleaned up. In fact, in some cases, the messier you are, the better. Now, I'm not advocating being messy, but if it just meets life the way life is. Now, when our grandkids come in, we haven't built in our basement, so our family room is the place of gathering. And Becky she has all of our other three kids' toys for all those years. Becky saves everything. And so, here come the grandkids, and it looks like it just looks like the earth broke loose in there, and it's disaster waiting to happen, but it works.
We have seven grandchildren, four and a half in there.
Don't worry about how it all looks. I had to really get over that. Paul, you're going to say something?
Well, I'm just going to, you finish what you're saying.
No, I'm sorry.
Just an observation that you notice there's 14 women here and just three men. And, you know, what does that say to you? And what we're, you know, the hard part, I think, is how does a man get in on that?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it'd be great to hear what your part has been, because we do the same.
Yeah.
Most of the people we've, you know, connected with or got involved or led to Christ in this context have been Phyllis's initiation.
Yeah.
I get the husband after she's got to know the wife. How did you?
It didn't work that way with us because I'm the extrovert, Becky's the introvert. It really came through mostly through my initiatives, wouldn't you say? And then you came in behind it. And she
did. What initiatives
did you take? I'm little acts of kindness. I'm going to get into some other things in a minute. Right here, interestingly enough, they know that I am involved with the Navigators. And they know now that I lead the U.S. work, but I didn't tell them for years. But they knew that I had a position. And so when I invited them to help me, they felt privileged. I didn't realize that. You know, they actually wanted to help. I talk to them all the time. I'm always in their world. Becky does this. We team up on this, and Becky handles that pretty much. But there's some other things here I'll show you in a second.
Alan?
Uh-huh.
Because Ken, my husband's an extrovert, too. I want to hide and be more private, I think.
Yeah.
Although our house, we have people there a lot, and our neighbors have commented on that. That, you know, when they drive by, they see cars
yeah.
drive by all the time. And how do we handle that? And, you know, my response is that our home is where we open our lives to people and where
yeah.
we open our lives to us. So it's open. Well, they look at it as a burden. And I don't look at it that way, and it's opened up an opportunity. But Ken is our greeter.
Yeah.
Our house is in the first part of our development.
Yeah.
So everyone drives by us constantly, and he waves.
Yeah.
I can kill him sometimes.
Yeah.
I haven't even done other than just yeah. wait. But
well, Becky gets she.
People have commented about that alone because our neighborhood
yeah.
is similar in that we're isolated and no one speaks or waits if
yeah.
he does that. And so, you know, just simple things like that, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, like you were saying, Barbara, earlier, the smallest things show up later. You never realized what was going on. And, wow, I just, the things that they tell me now, that when you did that, and I think, well, I didn't even know I did that. And,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, like that day we had this huge snowstorm. And we had a 17-inch snow, and I didn't have my snowblower at the time. Well, went next door and shoveled their huge driveway. Well, man, I'll tell you, that made a difference. That really made a difference. I mean, when they got that, you know, they understand you're shoveling a 3-inch snowstorm. But a 17-inch snowstorm, no, they don't understand that. And That's a big one. And so what you're doing is you're not manipulating it, but what you are saying is, where can I get the biggest bang for my buck all the time in terms of my relationship with them?
I think we sometimes in the Christian world confuse what the spiritual gifts are. When we say, you know, the gift of hospitality, then we think we have to put out this beautiful spread.
Yeah.
I think it's when you have people into your home and they feel comfortable, you've created an atmosphere that they're the most important thing,
yeah.
and it's not the things, it's not what you eat. And
yeah.
I think the gift of evangelism is
not
the evangelist out there. That's not the gift of evangelism.
Yeah.
Some have that. But some of us have the gift of evangelism where just sharing Christ in small ways is very natural.
Yeah.
So we can use the gifts.
I agree with you. One of the things I try to tell people when they come into my house, now I don't like a filthy, dirty house, don't get me wrong, but... Becky knows that. But I try to tell people our house is a house that's lived in. And we want it that way. So, you know, when you come in here, you're coming into a house that is designed to be lived in. So put your feet up. Don't worry about the furniture. Whatever you want to do, just come on in and let it happen. Now, that's the way I live, and it's the way Becky and I live. We don't really care too much about the preciseness of things, because I tell you, if you try to perform for your neighbors, you're in trouble. And most of the time, their standards are not that high. And so you intimidate the daylights out of them if you put them in that kind of a situation. All right?
Example of our oldest daughter, they live on a military base. And since so many guys are TDY, when I've been there, Amy's the type that she'll see a mom and kids walking down the street, or she'll think, oh, you know, their husband's been gone. And she hasn't planned for it or anything. She'll just, hey, how about coming over for dinner? So she's the type that just, no matter what her house looks like, no matter if the kids are spending, she just invites them in. And it just meets a need of those people.
And she's got a basement on the base, and you know, they put a rug down there. You can't build it in on a base, and so you know, it's like the earth broke loose down there. But what Amy does is just throws all those kids down in the basement, says, you know, do anything you want to do, you know, have a ball. And so one of the things we've learned with our kids is they caught a lot of it growing up, and in some cases, they're better at it than we are. So, other thing is prayer. Now, I don't know whether I've... A daily asking God for the desired outcomes. I'm not going to spend... You know this is so obvious, but Steve, my neighbor, you know, every morning I'm sitting in my study, and in the wintertime it's dark, so my light's on, and my study is closest to his house so he can see it. And so we're standing there talking. This is before he's a believer. But we're really talking about Jesus now. And so Steve, I hear his truck go on, and he lets it warm up, and then he comes out and gets in his car and takes off and goes to the factory that he runs. And So we're out playing golf, and I said to Steve, well, you know, I hear your truck going off. He said, yeah, Alan. He said, every morning when I get in that truck, he says, I never get in that truck that I don't think about something you've told me. And I thought, now that's really interesting. So then I said to him, I said, well, Steve, I said, I know you see that light on. I said, that's my study. And I said, there's never a morning that I'm home and that light is on and you turn the key in your truck that I'm not praying for you. Man, that had an impact on him. And it's true. Never did it happen. As soon as that truck and the engine would go over, pray for him. And now every one of the names that I've listed, I have a list of those people. And every day they're praying. I'm praying for them. Now, let me tell you about Becky, Dick and Priscilla's daughter. She was an Olympic-level swimmer, all-state here in Colorado, full scholarship, University of Arkansas. Injuries are the only thing kept her off of the Olympic team. Now, I had been involved with some things, and we had taken them to a Sky Sox game when we had Navigator Night, and we had talked a lot, quite a bit about Becky at the University of Arkansas. And Dick says to me, Alan, Becky is involved in this group, and I can tell right away it's one of the group, and I know we're not at the University of Arkansas, so I know it's Campus Crusade, InterVarsity, or FCA, almost for sure. So I talked to him about these groups, and I say, Dick, don't worry about it. It'll be okay. I said, they're good people. And I said, they're not going to pull her out of the Catholic Church or do a bunch of damage to her that will scare you half to death. It's okay. Well, I just wanted to know. Well, this went back and forth. Now, Becky came to the Lord, and it was a phenomenal conversion through FCA. Now, the thrilling part of all that is that he brought that back to me, but in terms of prayer, I had been praying that she would get connected with one of those groups. and asking God to connect her so that the gospel would be a back doorway through into the family, through her life. Because I just was pretty sure there was some openness in her life, that she had had some exposure to some other believers plus us. And I thought, boy, she is a gold mine. Well, now I see Becky coming back and coming home over the holidays, big smile on her face. Well, I didn't lead her to the Lord, but I'm saying to the Lord, Lord, thank you. Thank you for giving me a part in that life and in that family. So then she brings some friends home, and they want to go on a tour of the Glen. And so Becky's mother didn't want to walk down the steps to the carriage house to see the tunnel and some other things that are down there. And so I went down with Becky and her friend. So that gave us a chance to talk privately. And I looked at Becky and I said, Becky, I just want you to know that I had a big part in your coming to Jesus. Because I said, Becky, I prayed for you every day. She lit up like a Christmas tree. Just like a Christmas tree, because somebody had loved her and had taken the time to pray for her. Hardly any contact with her other than just with her mother and dad. But you can imagine the impression, because she's sitting there and saying, wow, I had no idea, and my neighbor was over there praying for me every day. So it's really important. Now, here's a biggie. Acting on the Lord's prompting. Now, I'm going to tell you a scary story here. I'm not suggesting you do this, but I do want you to get the point. Steve and I were moving down the line, and I knew he was ready to read the Bible. Like, for example, one day we're in a golf cart, and as we're in the golf cart, we're driving along, the grass is wet. And I had gone over to his company and had met some of his employees. For some reason, Steve just loves his employees. He just has a deep love for them long before he'd come to the Lord. And they're Korean, Hispanic, African American. So it's a gold mine in terms of the gospel. And so I said to him, I said, Steve, how is it going with your employees? And Steve is driving and he hits the brake on the cart. And as he hits the brake on the cart slides. And he put his head down and he said, Alan, they need Jesus and I need Jesus. Now, that was huge. So it wasn't long after that I asked him to read the Bible with us. No response. And I thought, now how can we be such great friends and him be moving along and that's not working? So, we're playing golf again, and I said to him, Steve, if you ever like to read the Bible with us, we'd love to do that with you. Here's what we do. And I explained, no response. So one day I'm driving home from the Glen, and I'm on I-25, and it's mid-afternoon, and I'm going home to pack, or I plan to pack for a trip. And so I thought, Lord, what is it with Steve? I don't know whether the Lord speaks to you like this or not, but for me, it went just like this. Alan, go over to his office and sit down with him and tell him he needs to read the Bible with you. Don't ask him, tell him. So I called Sandy, my youngest daughter, and I said, Sandy, this is sweaty palm time. I said, we're at a point with Steve, and I said, we're stuck. And I said, I'm going over to his office, and I'm going to tell him he needs to read the Bible with me. So I called Steve, and Steve says, yeah, come on over. Got over there, and now Steve's a little bit nervous because, showing up mid-afternoon to my office, his office is glassed in. And I walk back through the factory and into his office, and we sit down, and I said to him, Steve, I said, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. But I said, I just feel like I've got to tell you. I said, I believe I'm sitting in here in your office to tell you, Steve, you need to read the Bible with me. I said, now I've asked you to read the Bible with me a number of times, but Steve, I'm telling you, you need to read the Bible with me. Well, guess what happened? Steve went, Alan, I've wanted to read the Bible with you for a long time. But he said, I have a problem reading. And he said, I've been so afraid to tell you that. Now, he can read big letters, but he has real bad eyesight. And I looked at him and I said, Steve, that's no problem. We can work that out. I said, Debbie can read. Oh, yeah. I said, now, are you worried that I think any less about you? I said, let me tell you, I have a reading disability. It's hard for me to read. I said, I almost struggled in school half, 3/4 of my life before I figured it out. And so, boom. Next week, Steve's in my living room, and we're reading the Bible. Now, that was a clear direction from the Lord. Just boom. And that, what I'm going to say is, you got to be bold. So there are times where you have to be bold. And you just got to do it. And so, you're not going to get off the hook. I mean, people are not just going to come waltzing into the kingdom. There are going to be moments where you're going to have to do this in a powerful way. Yeah.
You couldn't have done that if you hadn't had the relationship first.
No. Right? And the other thing is, I would have never done it in 1,000 years. I'm not an obnoxious person most of the time. And the reason is the prompting of the Lord. Now, I heard the Lord say, go tell him to read the Bible. Now, you can take it any way you want to, but that's what I heard, and I just obeyed, and boom, it went. Now, I went in there with a high degree of confidence that he was going to respond, because I felt there was something holding him back, and I knew it wasn't our friendship. So I had to break through that, and so God is just saying, look, I'll take care of you. You just go tell him to do it. All right, it involves making your neighbors your friends. Not necessarily your very best friends, but certainly friends, more than acquaintances. So you got to make them your friends. And then, communicate interest in the family. That's not God to family events. That we hopefully he will go, but go to family events is what we're trying to say there. And being there in times of suffering. Now, Becky has, you want to tell them about your deal with the when Debbie's father-in-law died. Yeah, well, that's come more complicated.
I think what I was talking about is Debbie's dad had passed away. Debbie's mom and dad lived in their basement. They made an apartment. So the point was that I didn't know him that well, but I went to the funeral, spent some time talking with him, and just being there for him, listening. So I think that's what.
Yeah. So when suffering comes, show up. Be there. No vote, no nothing. Just be there.
Uh-huh. We had a neighbor who died recently, and we had started developing this relationship, and he had lung cancer that's terminal, and in his 50s, so he was young. And I'm not sure exactly where he was, and it just impacted me when I walked in their house that day, and his bed,
crumpled
up, and he was gone.
Yeah.
How horrible that was. I don't know where he is.
Yeah.
And, I wish we'd been a little bit more.
Yeah, and all of us have those feelings.
I know, but I'm just saying, take that opportunity when you have it.
Yeah.
Suffering, if you know it's coming, take that opportunity.
Yeah. It just be there. If somebody's in pain, again, you're going to see that the most costly thing in all this is time. And every one of us is saying we don't have the time. But now, look, I travel about 40-50% of the time. I've got all kinds of meetings when I'm in town. And it does spread things out. There's no question about that. But you can do it if you just make it a priority. You've got to decide that you're going to love these people and that they're going to be your friends, and that when suffering comes, you're going to be there. And then, I'm sorry about this, our projector has to go in for repair, but have fun together. Have a lot of fun together. Now, for me, I'll get into this in a minute, it's golf. I'm an awful golfer, but doesn't make any difference. We have a lot of fun out on the golf course together. Now, one thing I did, well, I'll wait to get through that. It requires time. We've already talked about that. Finding what's in common. This is the golf thing. Both my neighbors, the men, love golf. And so now, one day when we're first, the second time we played golf together, they're tighter than bark on a tree with me. I'm riding in a cart alone. They're riding together. They're talking because we were in the neighborhood later on. They're not sure whether they like me or not. So we're coming up on the 18th hole. And I've got to get them to know that I really like to have fun. And they haven't opened up enough for me to do that. You know, we've kind of joked around on the tee and a few things. But so they're both on the green, and I'm off the green. And their ball is in a straight line to my ball that's up here off the green. So I'm thinking, okay, now what can I do? I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to step on their ball and drive that ball right straight down into the green as I walk by and just keep right on walking. So as I'm walking along, I just push that ball down in the hole and next one, just push it down. Kept on walking. Well, they were talking back there and they didn't see it all. So now I'm up there and I'm standing on my ball getting ready to chip in, and they both walk up to the ball and they see it down in the ground. Well, they just cracked up. They just started laughing. They couldn't stop laughing because that is a violation of etiquette to the nth degree in golf. I mean, you just don't do that on a golf course. And, you know, I'm not even laughing. I'm just standing over there. Well, that broke the ice. We're in. Well, there's got to be risk like that where they've got to know that you know how to have fun. And they both know now that we know how to have fun and we know how to find what's in common together. And in this case, as I say, it's golfing. And it involves forming a team. Now, I'm not talking about a close-knit team, but for example, with golfing, when I play golf with them, let's say they're going to like 60% of me. But there's this other 40% that they're not going to like. Or at least it's not going to be all that attractive to them. Maybe I'm too intense. Maybe my jokes are no good. Something like that. Okay, so now what I want to do is I want to get somebody else, a couple other people to go with me that I'm sure will be attractive to them. So that they can compensate for me, and when they walk off the golf course, they can say, oh, I see. They're not all cookie cutters. They're all different. So I took Mike Sheamy with me. Well, man, they loved Mike. And then I have a buddy up in Minneapolis who is close to, you know, high 70s golfer. Well, believe me, he got their attention. And old Tom is just a low-keyed, laid-back guy. And they just thought, well, boy, I'll tell you what. And then we went up to Arrowhead and played golf, and that with those guys, that was the real winner. And I bring my children, like my sons-in-law's in, and have them go with me into something like that, so that they see that we're in it together. And the other thing is, by the way, those people that are in your busy house in, when you come over, your neighbors, if you're not careful, they will feel outside of that loop. In other words, you've got your circle of friends, but they're on the outside. So what you do is you invite them in to meet your friends so that they feel a part of that. And that's one of the things we've done with the golf. Okay. Well, it involves forming a team. Let the neighbors see, you know, you've got that and then that. All right, let's go on and... It involves perseverance, and hanging in there like crazy is a very, very important one. And now I want to go back here to this one, though, right here. Let the neighbors see a more full expression of the gospel than just ourselves. It involves articulation of the gospel, reading the Bible, that is the Gospel of John, and a presentation. Now, other than time, this is the other key. You do have, whatever you do when you form a team, it is not just life. There is a time where you're going to sit down and tell them the full gospel in terms of what it means. And it is very important to be in a team where one of the members of the team knows how to lead a discussion group and knows how to let that be free, not tight and confined. No, you're not getting it. Hey, don't worry about it. Just leave it free. And there is skill involved in this, and there's some training that's involved in this, but it's well down the road. If you're just getting going with your neighbors, you're at least 3 or 4 years away. So, hey, do all the other stuff, and then find somebody on your team who's very good at this, and then begin to move with it, like Hank down there. One of those guys that you're involved with, whether it's you or the other guy, is very, very good at this. And so you want to get that person, when you pull it together, you want to team it. You want it to be a significant number of people. And with us, it wasn't that. But you'd like to get a group, and you want a very good leader. And ultimately, you're going to have to come down to the point to say, this is the gospel, and would you like to receive Jesus? You're going to have to ask that question. Now, there are two sweaty palm times in this process. One is, would you like to read the Bible with me? That's a scary time. The other time is, would you like to receive Jesus Christ in your life? Or have you done that? It's just like any form of evangelism. It's highly relational, but you're going to have to do that. And it just demands the courage to be able to do it and the ability. Now, we've got a few minutes and we'll have some questions. Let me tell you the story here. Kent and Jill Shellhouse, Tom and Priscilla Fisher, Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been there and I've seen this. Everything I've told you, they do. So what I'm telling you is not just me. Everything I've said, these people do as well. Now, Priscilla was, in fact, I've got the story over here. Do we have that handout? Everybody's got the handout. Okay. She had a managerial job. She decided to quit so that she could concentrate on her neighbors. She's done every one of these things as well as Tom. Today, over 20% of their neighborhood is in the kingdom as a result of their ministry. And growing. And there are things that have happened. You'll read the story in there, but I could tell you story after story after story after story of how people have come into the kingdom as a result of their lives. It's a phenomenal story. And I tell you, the people, when you go there, they just have a glow about them. And one thing we all need to realize is when we get involved in people's lives, it's not just those people that grow. It's us. We grow. Because the Spirit of God teaches us as we work. Now, I was just up in Fargo. Larry and Julie Leitner. Larry is a businessman up there. Now, here's the way this works. They've done everything that I've told you. They do focus on their neighbors, but I was in a hotel room where we were having lunch, a little luncheon room. And there were about 12 men sitting in that room, all of whom had come to the Lord through Larry's loving them and nurturing them along. The stories that they told, every one of those men were involved in ministry themselves, doing exactly the same things. So then in the afternoon, what we did is we went over to Larry's house, and Julie had invited the wives over. And we met with the wives. Julie's plugged into the wives, same thing. Life, excitement. The other thing is Julie and Larry's daughter was there. And they had done what we do, only they hadn't, you know, it took us 30-some years to figure out how to do it. They're younger and their kids are younger. All of their children were involved with them in this. And just in this case, their daughter was there, and she was talking about her ministry that God had given her. And so what happens for those of you who have children or grandchildren, what will happen, and Hank, this would be a big deal down with your church, they will catch it. You don't even have to teach it. They will just catch it if your home looks like this, and they'll do it better than you ever dreamed you would do it. Because it's just so much a part of their life as they see it. So now you could go up there and see Larry and Julie and walk in, and you could see ministry all over the place. Now it's not so much direct neighborhood evangelism here as much as it is connections through business and some neighbors in the housing development there. So it looks a little different. Now, Denny and Sarah Williams are in Detroit, and they have actually moved into a neighborhood, very much like your situation, Barb, a little less exclusive. They don't have a golf course, but it's they have four couples that are in there with them. And the bottom line is they moved in there to advance the gospel. And guess what they call their ministry? They call it I think it's called the home, not the home fixer up ministry, but it's, can't remember exactly. I shouldn't have told the story because I can't remember what it was, but that's it. Home repair ministry. And so what they do is they just get involved with everybody and their uncle in helping. Now, when we were pulling out of their house that night after they had sat around and discussed this with us, the neighbor who was not a believer came over and stuck his head in the car window and said, "Where are you guys from?" And what he had done is he had gotten this neighbor had gotten this big lawnmower, you know, a riding mower. And the yards are not big enough. I mean, a push mower would get it. But he always wanted a riding mower. So he watches these four couples do all of these things. So guess what he does on Saturday? He doesn't know the Lord, but he gets on his riding mower and drives all over the neighborhood cutting the neighbor's yards. Well, he's on his way into the kingdom. And I'm telling you, if you get it, you got to wait on this thing. But it is the most, Nancy, it's the most fun thing you'll ever do in all your life. But it's costly, it's time consuming. But once the ball begins to roll, it is the most fun thing you've ever done in your life. Because what you're doing is you're doing your ministry with your friends. Everybody's in it. Even the non-believers are in it. Now, I want to wrap this up by saying Steve, my neighbor, and Debbie, they run this business down. They're not the owners, but they run a business down on the south side of Colorado Springs. The interesting thing is, I have never, ever told him how to do anything. But because they're there and those people are there, they've got 12 people reading the Bible. They're all minorities. And some of them have come to the Lord, and Steve and Debbie have no idea of what they're doing. Not a clue. They don't have any plan in mind. The only thing they've done is exactly what was done with them. Just love them, go with them, and he's always loved his employees. And so, boom, it just works. Now, it's not without its heartache. It's not without its pain. There are lots of struggles, there are lots of rejections, but I'm telling you, it, without a doubt, it is the single most fun thing I've ever done in my life, because it just has a sparkle to it. It just sparkles. I mean, it's the way God wants it done, and when you begin to move into this, you discover that. You say, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Now, I gave you a book, this book right here, or maybe I didn't. Okay. This is, just pass that out. It is more complicated than I make it. And now, there's another book here that we have for you called Divine Appointments. I may not have enough for everyone, so if you're a couple, just take one. But I've been with Bob, and just like Denny and Sarah, I was in a living room with Bob and Betty in Connecticut. And when I was there, the interesting thing is, it was full of non-Christians, non-believers, Bob was they read the Gospel of John, and they were discussing it. Now, this is the first time I visited. Again, Hank, this fits like a glove down where you guys are. I tell you, it is made for you guys like you owned it. And this little gal is sitting in the back of the room, and they're reading John 11. And the gal, she and her husband are newlyweds, and she says, "How can you not believe this? It is the way life is." Well, in the kingdom that night. Well, I was back 2 years later, and one of the reasons we're having at the U.S. President's Conference, Bob come. I went back 2 years, and here's this couple standing there. And as they're standing there, I said, "You know, I remember you. I said, I was in that Bible study, and you said this." She said, "Oh, I'm so glad you were there." She said, "We just love Jesus." And she said, "We're doing the same thing." Now, I'm telling you, this thing is dynamite. It is absolute dynamite. If you can team up, keep it simple, flow with people, give it the time, get the skills you need to pull it off when it comes to presenting the gospel, and wait and wait and pray and pray and pray until God works, because when it breaks loose, it just flows. So it's a lot slower on the front end, but it's like a locomotive. It just starts speeding up and moving. And I'm telling you, we have done it in our little world on a very limited time frame, and it still works. So I guess you can figure out I'm pretty excited about it. Okay, Hank, why don't you pray? We've got to quit, or I could keep going all day.
How many people did not get the divine appointments
with? Okay, we have a sign-up sheet over here somewhere. And this is a gift from me to you, so if you want to sign up on that. Because Bob's a businessman. He's been in business, and he's from West Virginia. That really makes him a fine man. And so, when you combine, you know, you guys think the cultural center of America is maybe New York or something like that. Nancy knows the cultural center of the U.S. is really West Virginia. Okay, Hank, you want to pray? Well, cutoff comes close. It really does. You want to pray for us?